we're doing our first regularly weekly episode of Space Time, a podcast for SpaceExplored.com this week. And it's fun because I've done a few episodes of these just kind of like here and there, but never on a weekly schedule, mostly because it's just been me. And over the last month or so with SpaceExplored.com, we built out a team with you and Nick and you know, a few contributors and everything. And so now we finally got a routine where this is like for real. So I don't know if it'll be every Friday morning or what, you know, when we'll land on recording, but we'll be here weekly starting this week. And we've got a whole host of topics to talk about, from Starship and the hot plan for now Monday, and CRS-21, which is happening this weekend. The state of Space Launch System and core stage hot fire testing of Rexena Space Center. And then we've got a bunch of headlines that we're going to run through. So just kind of the big topics for this week. So
Yeah, super exciting. We've had actually kind of a busy week a little bit this time. And then kind of a busy week coming forward.
Yeah, I mean, for December, in like a weird year that we are in, there is a calendar full of activity. So, you know, right down to the wire, like right down to the end of the month. So it's exciting.
It's very exciting.
Yep. So first off, let's introduce Starship in general, which is SpaceX's next generation rocket launch vehicle. Comes in two parts. You've got Starship, the vehicle, and you've got Super Heavy, the giant booster that goes under it in some circumstances. And what we're seeing out in Boca Chica, Texas, the southern tip of Texas, is SpaceX building and testing prototype versions of Starship. They named them by serial number. Right now we're on serial number 8, so SN8. And we've been waiting for this past week for their first high-altitude hop test. And that means that they literally launch the thing, it goes up in the air, exists in the air, hopefully comes back down and lands in one piece. And they've done,
hopefully. And they've that's a big hopefully.
Yeah, and they've done previous hop tests. So I think SN4 and SN6 were 150 meter hop test.
Yes, five and six.
Five and six, probably. Yeah, makes sense.
I think it was 5 and 6.
Yeah, so 150 meters. You know, you see it, you never lose sight of it. It's but it was incredibly impressive. And I think SN6, like, they did it twice, right? Like, it was.
I think so as well. Yeah.
Yeah, launched and landed.
Launched and landed, moved it back over. Like, it was like, it's like they move it over, like, I think it's like almost like 100 yards, something like that, and then just do it again.
Insane.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So that's 150 meters. So okay, there's our perspective there. This hop test is different because, for one, the prototype versions of Starship before have not had the nose cone, and
they've had, it's literally just been the tank and an engine.
Yeah, tank and engine.
Tanks and engine, and now it's a full on actual, like, yeah, tanks, engine, nose cone, aerodynamic surfaces for the free for all.
Yeah,
and it actually looks like a rocket, not a silo.
Yeah, it's looked like a big grain silo, and out in southern Texas, like, it just fits right in. And it looks, I mean, it really does look hilarious, like, flying, you know, as it like goes sideways, and then comes back down. It's like, farm equipment isn't supposed to do that, but now,
not funny looking silo.
Yeah, like, now it looks like a rocket. Like, you know, this is the fun thing. I got to go out there this week and see. Just, it was my first time in southern Texas and seeing what SpaceX was doing out there. And, you know, having seen Kennedy Space Center and Port Canaveral, where you see all the SpaceX hardware in action, seeing, like, the pre-production stuff for a non-active rocket yet, but that it actually will fly, is really cool. And it was remarkable just how much stuff out there is out in the open, where you just drive down this long road, highway. Mm-hmm. And at the tip of it, you've got a manufacturing facility where they're making these things. And then you can park and take pictures and see. And then you go 2 miles further, and they've got their launch site where they have Starhopper, which is like a very early prototype version that hopped a little bit. Looks tiny in comparison to Starship now, but it's huge in person. It's like this giant R2-D2. That just sits out there and, like, monitors.
Yep.
and they have, like, Wi-Fi antennas on top of it that just, like, spin. And they use it for, like, lighting, so it's functional, too. Looks like the coolest prop. And then they had SNA out there this week, so the serial number 8 version of Starship prototype. And you just see it. And, like, you go past the launch facility, like, half a mile, and there's the beach. Like, there's the Gulf of Mexico, and you can look to the right, and there's Rio Grande and Mexico. It's like, all of it is, like, public, you know, publicly accessible. There's a small gate around the launch facility, and they've added, like, a little bit more structure to it, and with, like, this really cool SpaceX branding inside of the gate. But otherwise, it's a construction site with a rocket on top of a big hill. It's, like, really cool.
It's weird because you look at the difference from, like, KSC than that. Like, what a major, what like government builds.
Right.
They build everything out first perfectly, and then they build the rocket.
Yeah.
Like, a commercial spaceport where, like, we'll build a rocket, and then we'll build a facility around the rocket we're building.
It's genius because, like, you know, you can find spaceports in America, Spaceport America, where they have fancy fancy facilities, but
no one launching.
Yeah, no one launching. And so to have, like, strictly a launch site and no facility yet is, you know, makes perfect sense. So So anyway, what Starship will be is so the history of SpaceX rockets, you've got, like, Falcon 1, you've got, like, functional rockets, Falcon 1, Falcon 9, Falcon Heavy, which is, like, a Falcon 9 rocket with two more Falcon 9 boosters on the SpaceX boosters on either side.
Yep.
And that's it. And Starship is, like, the next round of that, but on a way bigger scale, where instead of sending payloads and astronauts to low Earth orbit, it's capable of sending payloads to the moon, to Mars, beyond. And then there are even, like, NASA missions on the books being funded, where NASA wants to adapt a version of Starship for the human landing system. So NASA's got their mission to the moon under the Artemis program. In this decade, they have a team of, like, competing companies that all are making human landing systems, because NASA's rocket and spacecraft will get you to the moon, but not down to the moon. So it's like, NASA's hardware can go as far as the moon's orbit, but not to the surface. And so Starship, in one capacity, is responsible for taking people down to the surface, because it is like a launch and landing system.
Yeah, it's one thing, it's fully reusable.
Yeah.
Like, SpaceX's whole big thing is reusing everything they can reuse. And for the Falcon 9, they can reuse the fairings, and they can reuse the first stage, but they can't reuse the second stage.
Right.
I mean, they can even reuse the capsule that they launch, but the second stage they can't, because of how much energy it takes to deorbit it, and how much they can't put anything on there to reuse it. It's just impossible.
Right. And on Earth, you need a first stage for Starship called Super Heavy to get off of Earth because of Earth's gravity. On the moon, you don't have that gravity to deal with, the same level, so there's no need for Super Heavy as the first stage booster. So Starship is the only part of it's its own booster.
It's its own booster, its own spacecraft, its own landing system, everything.
Yeah, all in one.
So it's super, and this re-entry profile that it's going to be doing is just insane.
Because it does, like, a belly flop.
It's a skydiver. It has four surfaces on it, like two in the aft by the bottom, by the engines, and then two up on the nose cone.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of act as your arms and your legs. It's a skydiver to, like, aerodynamically, like, guide itself down.
Right, yeah.
And I just want to see that thing even attempt to do that.
And Starship, like, kind of looks like a generic rocket, like, if you were just to imagine what a rocket would look like.
Yeah, because the original looked like the Tintin rocket. Like, it had three legs, and it was like, we saw that when they released, announced it, I'm like, yes, it's finally happening, we're having a Tintin rocket, finally. And, so this week, I think we're looking at a flight, it's 15-kilometer flight. Well, actually, no, now I think it's more of a 12.5-kilometer flight, I think it's looking. At Monday, possibly there is possibly some testing today. They have road closures. Cameron County does roads. They work with closing the major road that goes right next to it because it's a public road. And there's still a scheduled road closure today, so they might be doing testing today. They might not. We don't really know. They haven't said anything because SpaceX doesn't really say anything with space. We just kind of guess. So a NOTAM is just short for Notice to Airmen, and that's something we don't really look out for, because you can just look up TFR, temporary flight restrictions. TFRs are in NOTAMs, but NOTAMs also have plenty of other things that pilots need to fly. From the Cameron County judge, they closed that main road, that public road next to it.
Yeah. And so now we're looking at Monday. It's, you know, cool. It's kind of a week after the first initial date was, and then Elon tweeted that it's going to be like Wednesday, no earlier than Wednesday, meaning Wednesday or after. And then there was that the flight restriction for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Well, yeah, we're kind of used to this by now, that it just gets pushed back, you know, eventually, and just keeps on. One day, it'll happen eventually, hopefully by Christmas.
We're gonna bring in my little astronaut Rory here.
All right.
While our podcast is, so he's been a guest on many 9to5 Mac podcast over the years. Yeah.
And the one thing we're not expecting is it the length?
Right. Like, so like Elon gave his, you know, and like his productions usually are like more optimistic than what happens, and so he predicted like a one third chance that SN8 will land, and then 2/3 chance that it won't. And like if it doesn't, then there's a lot of possibilities it could blow up.
So several things they haven't done before, which is the first for this flight, is launching it one that high with firing the engines that long. Well, they've tested the individual engines at McGregor, their testing facility in Texas, for that long. But they haven't flown them with actual flight hardware for that long. Then they haven't relit them in atmosphere yet. They've only just lit the engines on the ground, so they have to test that. They haven't done this aerodynamic profile before. Like the belly flop with like the flip out landing. Like there's so much they haven't done before that there's just such a low chance of this thing actually landing. But if it does, I mean, like they're ready. Like that's crazy. Like it's legit. Yeah, the thing is, if it blows up, they have almost two full. I know SN9 is fully stacked in their high bay, already with everything ready on it, pretty much, other than the engines. And I think SN10 is pretty close. So like, if it doesn't happen, all right, cool. Just throw the next one on there and try again. Yeah. So coming up this weekend, the first launch attempt. Its first launch attempt is going to be tomorrow, CRS-21, which is NASA's, which is SpaceX's launch for NASA. It is a commercial resupply mission to the International Space Station. It is the first of the Phase 2 CRS contracts. So they've had the Phase 1 contract, which was, I think, early 2010s. I think 2014, I think, was the first launch. This is pretty much, thankfully, the to CRS, this is the reason why we have Falcon 9. It pretty much funded.
CRS is the reason I'm into space.
Pretty much, yeah, as well as the reason for Space Explorer. Yeah. It's also the reason why we have Falcon 9, because NASA paid SpaceX to develop the Falcon 9 rocket and Dragon spacecraft to do this contract. I mean, it probably would have happened anyways.
I mean, it isn't
not,
like...
It not
isn't
as
like,
fast
as
it would have happened.
Yeah, it isn't like SpaceX was like given like free money to do nothing. Like they were paid for a service, but this is the service that they were prepared for, and they're in the rank. Like it's not just SpaceX in the commercial resupply.
Also have Northrop Grumman with the Cygnus program, and then now this is the first for SpaceX. Northrop Grumman's been doing the Phase 2 contract since end of last year.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first one for SpaceX with the Phase 2, which brought in Sierra Nevada Corporation with their Dream Chaser, which is probably the most exciting spacecraft to be developed since Shuttle.
So what's the timeline for that? Because it looks like a miniature space shuttle, right?
Yeah, it's a miniature space shuttle, kind of. Like they make some changes.
Extremely miniature. Yeah.
Yeah, it's literally, imagine like just a tiny little toy space shuttle, and that's what it is. And I think it's planning on launching next year.
Okay.
Cool. It's launching on Vulcan, which is ULA's...
United Launch Alliance's next generation rocket.
Yeah. Next generation rocket. So we have to wait for that to launch first before they can launch. I'll have to check to see what their first mission is.
And that's part of the nice thing with SpaceX is that they've got their own rocket and spacecraft.
And spacecraft. And the spacecraft for this mission is the Dragon 2 capsule.
Right. So a year ago, I went out to see CRS-19... in person, on site, through NASA Social, which is this awesome outreach program that NASA does, and that was my first exposure to any of this stuff. And then in the year since then, you know, I've been addicted to all of this, and just I love it. But anyway, that was the next to the last use of Crew Dragon as it was designed. Then CRS-20 back in March or so of this year. That was the last.
Yeah, CRS-20 was for the last Cargo Dragon.
Yeah, last Cargo Dragon, and then now CRS-21 is the first of this Phase 2, like as you mentioned. And
Dragon 2, which is pretty much a Crew Dragon capsule.
Yes, yeah, so Crew Dragon being what flies astronauts. It's designed for people to be inside.
It's designed for people. It has the avionics to do automatic autonomous docking with the station. Mm-hmm. The Cargo Dragon can only be berthed, which is when the Kennet arm grabs the capsule while it's in orbit, while it's flying right underneath the station, grabs it, and then manually puts it into one of the berthing.
And that has to be handled by an astronaut or cosmonaut?
It has to be done by an astronaut, and this now can be completely hands-off from an astronaut. It docks all by itself, and it looks pretty much just like a Crew Dragon. Just remove anything that would be needed for a crew, like backup, life support systems, abort system, seats, anything to control it, pretty much. It's just a cargo vessel with a little trunk in the back for the launch.
And as we know it now, the previous Cargo Dragon version is retired, so those will no longer be
flying. Yeah, those won't be flying. I think those went up to, like, I think four-time use, I think. They could reuse them.
Pretty good.
Which is pretty good, yeah. They can. And so these are also planned on being reused. I think they can be reused more.
Cool.
As well.
Nice.
Yeah, and right now I think one of the cooler items is going to be in the trunk. It's like it's a pressurized airlock that you can pretty much launch CubeSats from, trash, or the objects from, and it's pretty much just docks and then just takes off, launches, puts it back on, as well as some medical experiments for testing their blood, being able to do blood tests in space. Apparently that's I'm not a medical expert, but apparently it needs gravity to do that as we current technology, but they have experiment to be able to do that in low Earth orbit, with low Earth orbit, so that it can, like, we can, when we have long duration missions of astronauts sick, they can test their blood in space, which is kind of a cool little experiment they're planning for future missions.
Cool. Yep. One of the coolest things. So right now at the International Space Station, there is the expedition crew. I think we're on 63, 64.
Yes.
Which is, I think, astronaut Kate Rubens on the NASA side, and then two cosmonauts named Sergey. Is that right?
Yes.
Sergey and Sergey.
Don't ask me how to pronounce their last names. Yeah. There's the Sergeys.
Sergey and Sergey, and they both just did their. I think both of them. It was their first spacewalk. So mm-hmm. where they worked outside of the space station, which is like super intense 8-hour work. It's really cool.
Yep.
And then you had Crew One, which is the SpaceX flight for NASA for a commercial crew program, where post the age of the space shuttle, NASA couldn't send astronauts to the space station on their own. They relied on Russia and the Soyuz rocket. Now they're relying on SpaceX, and they will eventually add Boeing to the program. When Boeing's Starliner spacecraft is approved for spaceflight, which will fly on a
Atlas V
from the United Launch Alliance. Mm-hmm. Cool. So, but at the space station right now, you've got that expedition crew, and you've got Crew One, because it's the first operational flight for SpaceX with astronauts. You had Demo 2 earlier in the year, where it was just a demonstration for it being longer than planned for, because they needed the extra hands on deck there. But now you've got the first, like, 6-month stint of astronauts on space station through, you know, via SpaceX. And that's 3 NASA astronauts and 1 JAXA astronaut, Japan's space agency. And they're all there together. There's a lot of people on the U.S. half of the space station, 2 cosmonauts on the Russian side. And it's like, what do you do when you don't have enough beds? And Commander Hopkins, I believe, decided to opt to sleep in the Crew Dragon because there weren't enough beds.
Yeah, so there's not enough beds for a full crew of 7 to sleep, but there are beds in the Dragon for people to sleep in, or at least sleeping bags for them to sleep in. And so he volunteered. It was tradition when the shuttle came up that the commander would sleep in the shuttle, so he decided that he would sleep in the shuttle. And he actually kind of talked about, like, it's not like his bedroom, like he's treating how the bedrooms are in ISS, because
right.
him going in and out a lot can cause, like, if he accidentally damages something.
Right, you don't want to, like, wear it down.
That would be really, really bad. So he's actually like, I'm only in there to sleep, if I'm doing like anything else, I'm outside.
And this is the first time that Crew Dragon, the spacecraft, has been docked for, or you know, expected to be docked
will,
for.
Will be docked.
Will be docked for 6 months versus like 2.
Yeah, I think it was 2 months for DM2.
Yeah, it was meant to be like a few weeks, and it ended up being longer because it needed the help. But that was a demonstration mission. This is as much a demonstration mission because even though it's operational, because they've never had Crew Dragon docked for that long. This will be the first time that there's two SpaceX spacecrafts attached to ISS at the same time, because there will
be cool.
Yeah,
it's gonna be really cool to see the two of them from pictures.
Yeah, there will be Crew Dragon as there is now, and then Dragon 2 for cargo offloading for a few weeks.
For a few weeks before they send that back and they return some experiments, and then they can reuse that. Interesting that's gonna show up. I have to look at the order of flights going up. But I think I'm pretty sure the next crewed flight is Crew 2. I don't know. I don't think there's another Soyuz launch. Or is there another Soyuz launch for crewed?
I don't know. Well, there's not for a NASA astronaut, so...
Yeah, so the interesting thing is there's an agreement between Russia and the United States that there will always be one Russian cosmonaut and one American on the International Space Station at all times. Mm-hmm. And I think with how the crew rotation is going to go, it's interesting that they're going to have, like, there's going to be a time where I think where there's crew two is going to come up with crew one still there, mm-hmm. and then they're going to have to, like, switch. They can still have that American astronaut on that side.
Yeah.
Or that they're going to leave and there's not going to be one. I have to look at the rotation because it's going to be interesting.
And it's like anyone who flies with SpaceX through commercial crew right now, even if it's a JAXA astronaut or an ESA astronaut, as we'll see with crew two, right? That those are all on the U.S. side because it's the U.S. flight and Russia's not buying seats that way.
So they do share the space.
Right.
Like Russia share, like they set up half the food. And
I mean, they interact food. A lot, right?
They interact a lot. There was a JAXA and ESA module mm-hmm. up there, but there are more laboratories and like crew quarters.
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of where they do most of their experiments, are on the ESA laboratory and the JAXA laboratory modules.
And at some point next year, Tom Cruise will be there.
Yeah, I think November, but we don't really know. Like, there's an Axiom launch, but they haven't announced it.
So Axiom being a commercial company that their whole business is finding customers to fly privately.
Yeah, half of their is sending tourists to the ISS or into space, and the other half is building a commercial space station.
Indeed, and so on behalf of SpaceX, they found Tom Cruise, and there's also a small list of customers that's on like their first official commercial mission, just private mission. What's the name of that crew that they've been revealing the people of?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah,
I know
it's got a cool name.
It's a former astronaut, and then I don't remember who the other person is, but they're kind of more like they're like the commander and pilot. I think of the mission.
Yeah,
they'll be the ones like kind of like there for Axiom as like. We're leading.
Like, you don't want to have just four rich people on a spacecraft.
Yeah, you don't want to send four people who don't know how to fly a spacecraft into space. That would be a terrible decision.
Yeah.
But technically, though, they won't have to fly, but they're there just in case. And then the other two are going to be...
That would be very bad PR.
That have paid. We're thinking it's going to be Tom Cruise and then their...
Director.
I don't know. I think his director is going to come up and they're going to film some scenes for a movie.
Yeah, so... Neat. Cool. All right. SLS core stage at Stennis. So I moved to Orlando recently just for the space program and to be, you know, half an hour away.
And then everything pops off in Mississippi.
And Texas. I mean, it's been going on mm-hmm. in Texas for a while, but like I only went to Texas because I drove and it's 12 hours from Biloxi where I lived before. And I've got family here. And, you know, it's a very long drive from Orlando. So in anywhere in Florida. But Stennis Space Center is here in Mississippi. I actually got to go there. I've gone for like 3 years in a row before this year for half marathons where I would run. And that was the coolest thing. It was like I was, you know, marginally interested in space and everything. And it was like, I know this is a cool place. I don't really know anything about it, but it's a space center. It's NASA official. And you really couldn't see anything on the runs. Like, or, you know, you saw like the main buildings and stuff, but you didn't really know what was happening unless you studied it. Earlier this year, I got to go out to the state of NASA in like February, where current NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine spoke, and we also got to go out and see the B-2 test stand, where the core stage of Space Launch System currently is being ready to prepared to make sure it's good for flight. And next week they're going to do a wet dress rehearsal, which means that they're going to fuel it, right? Put the fuel in.
Oh, for the, yeah, they're going to fuel up the rocket pretty much. They're going to do everything that they're going to do prepare for a launch. Fuel it up, go through all the procedures that they're going to have to go through for doing that. And then once they're like literally ready to hit the fire button to fire up the engines, they're going to stop. And then they're going to detank it and safe the rocket, and then pretty much get it ready for the actual dress. That's why it's called a wet dress rehearsal compared to just a dry dress rehearsal or a regular dress rehearsal. Wet dress means that they have fuel going in there.
Yeah, and that's a very big deal because Space Launch System has been being developed for like a decade, but it is almost done. Basically, like, SLS was bought and developed in the age before you had all of the other launch providers right now, like SpaceX, and so that wasn't on the table yet. And now that SLS is being completed, finally, it's like, why didn't you just use these other rockets that now exist? And it's like, well, you've got the commitment to use this for at least these first three moon missions.
Yeah, we've already spent billions of dollars on this. We need to actually get something out of it by this point. We can't just cancel it. And they're actively changing the program as it goes. So originally, it was going to be 100% all done by NASA. NASA was going to own the launch vehicle. They're going to own the landing vehicle, the space station, the Lunar Gateway, which is going to be kind of like a miniature space station around the moon. And now they've kind of, with the Artemis program, which was announced by Jim Bryan signed during this administration, with all the new market that's evolved, they're kind of changing it over to like, well, we could just like use SLS to get people to the moon because it's the only rocket that currently is capable of it still, excluding Starship, but that's still technically a vehicle in development.
Yeah, even though NASA's got money behind Starship, you know, and their awards that they've been given to SpaceX, like they've got another thing that you covered for Space Explored, which was like this West Coast.
Oh yeah, they were gonna take. Apparently, they were like they wanted to do some re-entry studies with Starship, and it was saying that it was going to be over the Pacific Ocean, which when none of us has heard before. We're like, wait, what? It's going to be Starship's flying over the Pacific Ocean, but where is it going to, one, where is it going to launch from? Two, where is it going to land? Three, like, why not the Gulf of Mexico, where it's already kind of set up? Like, there's a whole lot of, like, just way more questions than answers that were given in that statement.
Which just makes it super interesting.
Makes it, like, super, super interesting. Like, I can't wait for that to kind of, like, develop and actually happen, because if people are I think there's an idea where technically you could, well, it kind of depends on how the actual reentry program changes as the program develops. Like, right now, it's like they're going to re-enter and then go straight down pretty much. But they could end up actually kind of re-entering higher in the atmosphere and have it go longer. So, like, when the shuttle re-entered, they actually started when they landed in Florida, they started re-entering the atmosphere over the Pacific Ocean, pretty much. And so they will fly over the United States, so they'll fly over Mexico. So that could still be the thing where they launch it out of Texas. They go like kind of like once around the Earth and then they re-enter and then they can still land in Texas.
Right.
But or they can show some love to Vandenberg, which doesn't get much action anymore.
Yeah.
They can build a Starship pad there and launch it from there.
In California, yeah. They never reach a launch there, just to be fair, but they're few and far between.
Few and far between.
Yeah, so all that to say that NASA is awarding money in SpaceX's direction for Starship specifically, which people love. But SLS is what we have today as far as what they've invested in over the last decade. And so the great news is that it's almost ready. And they've got their first mission with Space Launch System on the calendar for November 2021, which is an uncrewed, so no astronauts on board, lunar flyby mission that'll last, like, I think up to 2 to 3 weeks, where SLS launches from Florida, goes to the moon, sends the Orion spacecraft to the moon, goes around, comes back, and then Orion lands, and that's the spacecraft. So this week, I mean, the big thing that we're watching this week is that, as soon as Monday, the wet dress rehearsal we discussed a moment ago is on the calendar. If that goes well, assuming that goes well, then like 2.5 weeks later, 2 weeks later, then there's the hot fire test where they literally fuel it up and fire it in place from Center Space Center, which is like South Mississippi, right on the border with Louisiana. So it's very, you know, far from like a big city or anything like that.
Sure.
But it's just gonna be huge. Like the last time they've done something of this scale would have to be anything with the shuttle program.
And if the shuttle program or even Saturn V.
And then, yeah,
I know,
and,
last, Because the B, it's on the B1 stand, correct?
B2 test stand, yeah.
Oh, the B2, yeah, the B2 stand, I think the last time it was used, I think, actually was for Apollo.
Yeah.
I don't think they used it for shuttle at all.
Yeah, so...
They had a smaller pad that they used to test the engines for shuttle.
Yeah.
But that big stand is built and, like, was built for Apollo.
Yeah.
And
then, like, it was shuttered for years, and then it was refurbished just for SLS. So
yeah, it's a very historic area, that like area. It's like hollow ground pretty much. And what happened actually a few weeks back, it was actually, I think it was the weekend before Thanksgiving, they actually started stacking the boosters in the vehicle assembly building, which is, well, they're preparing to get them stacked, which is actually a really big step, because once you start stacking those boosters, there's actually a certain time frame from which you have to then launch from. So it's kind of like, this is kind of like the first step of, like, okay, it's happening. Like, it's going to happen with, hopefully within this time frame, once they start once they're all stacked up. I think after that, they'll have to, like, unstack them and then restack them. But, like, yeah, there's a certain time frame which you have to launch from with those things on. And I think they started that a few weeks back. Don't know if they have actually mounted the first one yet. They usually, when stuff like that happens, they usually, like, they post, like, the updates, like, days after it happens.
Obviously, for the hot fire test, that'll be, like, it won't be a mystery.
No, it's not going to be a mystery. Like, also, it's going to be a 7-minute fire, which is just, and they're extremely loud engines. People are going to hear that thing.
I imagine there will be folks kind of, like, enthusiasts gathered.
Yeah, there's going to be people who are going to be parking on the side of the road where they probably shouldn't be, and they're going to, like, just to hear it.
And there's on the interstate, there's a bridge to Louisiana that's steep, and you can really get a good aerial view over there, but it's further. And then... there's just a raised, you know, part of the road on the Mississippi side where you can see the B2 test stand from the road. I mainly only know this because it's been really lit up for the past few weeks as they test throughout the night and, like, have it active. And I drove past the other night, and it was, like, midnight, and it was like a Christmas tree out there. It was just, like, you couldn't miss it. Otherwise, I was like, I know that's where Stennis is, but I couldn't point to where the B2 test stand is because it's just a bunch of trees in front of you. But yeah, so I can't wait for that. I'll probably be back in Florida and then back here just before Christmas time to go out there and see it. I don't get invited to it, I will be one of the people parked on the interstate. It's going to be loud. Like, it's going to be
long, something that's not going to happen ever again, because the next time that thing fires up, it's going to be a launch. You're only going to hear the first, like, couple seconds of it.
Yeah,
because then it's a whole, like, 7-minute burn, I think.
Yeah, because as soon as they have everything held down, because it's not a launch facility, and they just test it to you know, get data from the experience, and that Kennedy is going to launch and be gone. Like, it's going to get out of here. So that's exciting. The other thing from this week is that The Verge reported that they were first to report that there was this issue with Orion, the spacecraft that goes on top of a space launch system, the rocket. And that's where the astronauts, the crew, are inside, and SLS gets Orion to the moon and around. And with this first one, there won't be people inside, but they want to make sure everything goes well because it's kind of that test, the human rated, basically. And there was a problem when they turned it on, that there's, like, a redundancy in the power system, and one part of the board didn't power on. And it's not that they did something wrong. The description is more like Orion, the spacecraft, has been ready for a long, long, long time. And
oh, very, very. This is like the oldest part of the SLS program.
Yeah.
Like, Orion was a thing before the SLS.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the capsule without a ride, pretty much. It was originally slated for the Ares, the Constellation program, which had the Ares 1 and the Ares 5.
So that's like Bush administration era.
That was Bush administration era. Yeah. Then it got moved to the National Launch System, like, between when Obama canceled the Constellation program and started up the National Launch System, which then they got renamed to the Space Launch System. And it's kind of just like, well, we have this great space, like, it's a great spacecraft built by Lockheed Martin. Like, it's pretty much a Apollo capsule modified to be the 21st century, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And it just popped along, and it's been pretty much ready for a very long time, just waiting for a ride. Like,
and so, like the one Orion spacecraft that we will use on this Artemis 1 mission next November at the earliest, powered it on. It's been through all these tests. You know, it's been around the country where they, like, test it for extreme conditions, temperature and everything. And now it's been at Kennedy for a few months now and in Florida. And they turned it on, and, like, something along the power system doesn't turn on. And it's not, like, the main thing. It's, like, a redundancy system. So they could technically, like, live without it. But they don't want to do that. Like, redundancies are there for a reason. And the last thing you want is for Orion to, like, get lost because it can't power itself because the main power system went down and the redundancy didn't work from the beginning. So there's work. There will be work to fix it. And The Verge basically said, like, you know, they had this from an internal presentation from Lockheed Martin employees, and it was, like, laid out, this is the problem, here are, like, three solutions, it could take up to 9 months. It's like,
which is, like, plenty of time to fix it. Like,
yeah, it was, like, it's, like, optimistically, like, 3 months. I think maybe, like, the longest was, like, 12 months. But it's kind of an unknown thing. It's like they don't really plan for this, or they don't have, you know, it wasn't expected. And so that's like, oh no, SLS is almost ready, and Orion has been sitting around for so long that it's now, it's like, it's got some issues from just
it's like, it's gonna be the most interesting, like, switch. Yeah. They're like, oh, well, now the rocket's ready, but it doesn't have a thing to launch.
Yeah, and so it's...
But...
At least there's enough time between now and November to hopefully resolve this thing. Because I saw, like, mild speculation, like, well, just launch without a spacecraft, because there's not going to be people on board. It's like, no, the whole point of this is that you've got Orion to go around the moon, and, like, there's...
Yeah.
Beyond just, like, a, you know, rating it for human spaceflight, there's a lot of stuff that they're going to be doing on that mission, so...
Which, I mean, it's not... Technically, I mean, that couldn't be the end of the world. It would be way more expensive because they have launched Orion without the SLS before.
Yeah, not so far, but...
They did, I think it was Expedition Flight Test 1, I think it was called. I can't remember what the name of the mission was, but it was launched on a Delta IV Heavy.
Okay.
And that actually went... I don't think it went around the moon, but it went out to the distance of the moon and back. That was years ago. That was, like, that was well before I started following it. But, yeah,
it's yeah. So that'll be, like, last minute drama to use to watch for. But we've got time for that to be resolved. It was funny though because it was Lauren Grush of The Verge who had the slide, like, deck and reported out the situation, and then NASA had, like, a blog post kind of minimizing it. It's like an update on Orion, and it was, like, laid out in, like, very briefly, like, this is what's happening. And then it was like, let's highlight all the progress with what we've done over the past few years, and now it's nearly ready. So, but that was very good reporting from The Verge. Let's talk about some headlines before we head off for the week. So, we've got one thing we've been following is Rocket Lab. It's a launch company.
They recently have now gone, like, oh, we're going to reuse our booster, like, about a year ago, and they finally. Just to get an update on how it went, which actually went very, very good. I think they pretty much said that everything, the RCS, the added RCS thrusters they put on the first stage were determined to work perfectly. The parachute attached with no issue, deployed and then detached with no issues.
And just for context, so Rocket Lab has, like, it's smaller than a Falcon rocket.
As small as, if you've ever seen the leg of a Falcon 9 booster, that the landing leg, that's the size.
Yeah, so they're not small, but they're really small in comparison to
me. They're small compared to other rockets, but they're still pretty big.
Yeah, and they were not designed from the start to be reusable, and it was kind of a challenge to... It was kind of like a dare, like, you know, why can't you make this reusable? And Rocket Lab's idea was, we'll just make a lot of these, and we'll be very efficient at making them, and we'll have multiple launch sites in New Zealand and Virginia. And I think they're even working on their second launch site in New Zealand, so they can do, like, launch here and launch here at the same place. And that they were happy with that. It's like, we're just going to launch a lot. And then there's there's a challenge of, like, well, no, make them reasonable. And so it's a little bit harder, I think, than what SpaceX had to do, because they designed for reusability at the start. Rocket Lab's, like, retrofitting theirs for reusability. And it's kind of working out.
So, yeah, the reason why they went with it was basically, like, well, yeah, like you said, they're going to, like, we're just going to make really good at making these, and that's going to be cheaper than building something that's reusable. And then they realized, and Peter Beck is the CEO of Rocket Lab. Is very famous being very open-minded. Like, he says, if someone comes to me with an idea that proves that it's better than what we're doing, we will do it.
Mm-hmm.
He interviewed with Tim Dodd, the Space Astronaut, about aerospike engines. Like, mm-hmm. if an engineer comes to me and says, we can build electron with aerospike engine, it's going to be better than what it is, he'll redesign the engine to be an aerospike.
Right.
That had to happen, of course. But then someone must have come to be like, hey, we do this, 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 and this. It can be reusable. Let's see if it's possible. And it's been, they've nailed it pretty much.
And their strategy has been, they've completed the first like booster recovery effort. They were a little bit coy about like releasing information in real time, so they kind of like let it drip out there over time. And in the end, it's like, everything went well. I guess they wanted to look over the data and have just good information. But they had one of the coolest videos with stage separation in space, where it's like a camera.
Oh, it's so cool.
A camera inside the rocket.
They're using like a 360 camera. And because it's 360, they can they can take the video and pan it.
Yeah.
And it goes up and follows the second stage up. I'm like, it's the coolest thing.
Yeah, that video is like tranquil. It's like mesmerizing. And then they showed video of splashdown and everything. So that came much later. But in the end, the kind of bottom line message was, this was a success. We've learned from it. We're not going to do a booster recovery next time, but we will do more in 2021. And before they do a full booster, like for refurbishment and reuse it for the first time, then they're going to focus on reusing components of the booster. And so, rather than, you know, before the booster just went out in space or got burned up, and like what did it do? It just went out in orbit.
The other ones they would break up on reentry. They were uncontrolled reentry pretty much.
Okay.
So what mostly happens, they probably tumbled and broke apart.
Yeah.
They started trying to control them, which is what the first step was like. Can we even make it through? They call it the wall, which is atmospheric reentry.
Yeah.
Can we make it through? And they were like, they were doing tests. I'm like, this thing's making it pretty through. Like, all right, like let's throw they did something called Brutus, which was like a hardened data recorder that would make it all the way down to the surface. They did that, and then let's throw RCS thrusters on it and see if we can control all the way down. And they kind of did a whole baby step, and then they finally did the full thing. And eventually, they're going to add helicopters to snatch it out of the water.
So. Yeah, and they did. I think it was March or so. They did a demonstration of what that will look like. You know, just they used two helicopters, basically one to carry the booster out and then one to recover it. And it's so freaking cool. It's like a Mission Impossible movie scene, but real life.
Yeah. another headline that actually popped out of kind of nowhere. Didn't really expect that thing to happen was a company called Avum.
Avum,
Avum, yeah. And when that stream popped up, I'm like, who is this? But they're a company based out of Huntsville, Alabama, and they're planning on... they're pretty much planning on launch. It's a small sat launcher, air launch system, competing alongside with people like Virgin Orbit and Northrop Grumman with their Pegasus rocket. But it's the difference is that their carrier aircraft is completely autonomous. It flies on its own, no need for pilots. It looks kind of kick-ass.
Yes, it does.
I think there was a quote I think I saw where it just said they didn't design it for looks, but it has a kick-ass factor to it.
Yes.
So, and they're going to be... So they're demonstrating autonomous flights, next year sometime. The whole stream pretty much was about, oh, hey, this is what we're doing. This is kind of what it is. We've been doing this since 2016, but we're now doing, here's a public reveal of it, and we're partnering with the Space Force. So,
yeah. So they have a real customer. It was the first time we saw the design of the spacecraft, which is Raven X. Is that what we're calling it?
Raven X is the name of the spacecraft.
Yeah. It's all caps, RAVN Space X. So,
and what they were calling the aircraft, the carrier aircraft, which is what we refer to it when it's Virgin Orbit with their Launcher One program, their 747 that carries a little rocket. 747 is called the carrier aircraft. Same thing with Pegasus and Northrop Grumman's aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
They were referring to it not as the carrier aircraft, but as Stage One, which apparently because
rocket lingo,
Which I'm like, that's not Stage One. What do you mean at Stage One? That's just a carrier. That doesn't really add anything. It just gives you a different platform to launch from. But they explained that it actually. This is going to get a little technical, but it adds Delta V to the rocket. So Delta V is, Delta is scientific for change.
Okay.
And V is for velocity, so change in velocity.
Okay.
Pretty much to get to orbit, to get to anywhere into that solar system, you need so much Delta V, so much ability to change your velocity, either slow down, speed up, or whatnot. And so with other air launch systems, they drop it, and then the aircraft, which is crewed, you know, has people on
board,
they have to fly to a safe distance before they can launch the rocket, ignite it. And he says that those aircraft, by the time they ignite it, like the help from the aircraft, the speed that it gave, is negated. But because there's no crew on this aircraft, they can drop it and light it right away.
Right.
They don't have to worry about the aircraft like flying away.
And they're gonna fly from a spaceport in Jacksonville, Florida.
Cecil Spaceport in Jacksonville, Florida. Jacksonville, Florida.
Yeah.
Which, when he said that, I thought he was joking. Like, I'm sitting there, I'm like, what do you mean, Cecil? What? Like, apparently, yes. Like, there's a, it's an old Navy air station converted into a private airport that then, like, did whatever classification with the FAA to become a spaceport.
Okay.
And, like, Boeing's done some stuff there, but, like, it hasn't really done much.
Yeah.
So, this is, like, their first kind of, like, customer that's going to actually launch from the spaceport.
Yeah.
And the whole plan of it is, so they're trying to take as much people out of the process as possible.
Right.
So you pretty much, you, he kind of showed this on stream live, which is cool. Like setting up a spacecraft, putting in like how much it weighs, what orbit you want, what type of, do you want to ride share with someone else? Do you want to do it dedicated just with your payload? And then he said, once you do this, you just have to just drop off your payload. Like that's all you have to do. You just give it to us. We'll integrate it. And then, with a touch of a button on, I think it was an iPad, actually.
Yeah.
He touched the button, and it ran a whole bunch of code. You can see, like, all the trajectories it was calculating and trying to figure out the optimal one. And all of a sudden, their demo flight, the demo plane, which is right next to it, starts up. Like, the engine start up and everything.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is cool and scary at the same time. Like, this is awesome. Like, I'm super excited for this company, because, like, expecting just being able to just do something that easy.
Yeah.
And only having...
And they weren't on your radar before yesterday, right?
No, not at all. So their YouTube channel has two videos. One video announcing the
unveiling, yeah.
Stream. Yeah, it was like a 19 seconds video saying, hey, we're going to do this in 2 days. And then the stream.
Yeah. And then the stream is, like, the presentation itself was, like, so low-key. It's like... The founder and CEO, you know, you got a little bit of the visual of the aircraft or the spacecraft, yep. You know, whatever. But then most of it was, like, the part we talked about where it's, like, controlling a computer. It's like...
Yeah, it was
That's the neat thing about all of this.
It's, yeah, it's very, like... I think... And also the price that he showed... like one of the, it cost $500,000. It was like around like $500,000, so about 500. I think it was $560,000, which is insane.
Right.
Like that's insanely cheap, like for a launch. now that doesn't include development of a spacecraft,
and, right?
And, like funding of like all of the stuff, but like just for the launch itself, like we're talking millions of other like spacecraft, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Insane.
Yeah. A few months ago in September, NASA put out a request for commercial companies to submit proposals for what's a lunar proof of concept demonstration of commerce. And so the idea is, long term, NASA hopes that the moon and space will be a whole marketplace that's not just involved with government agencies, but as we're seeing now, commercial companies too, like SpaceX and et cetera. And so, what they wanted to do was have a company propose for, like, I think, like, under $20,000, $25,000, collecting rocks on the moon by 2024, packaging them up, and then having NASA take ownership of those. So it isn't that NASA can't get their own moon rocks, it's that they wanted to literally demonstrate commerce on the moon.
So they're not returning the lunar samples to Earth, though.
They don't know yet. Yeah, but it isn't part of the deal. Like it's like that's a TBD detail. It's like to be decided, but it's not critical to the main proof of concept, which is just it's never been done before, where a commercial company sell something to NASA on the moon or to anyone else on the moon. And so they just wanted to do this to demonstrate lunar commerce. It's like, look, you can do business on the moon. It's possible.
Yeah. The interesting thing is the prices of them.
Like, yeah.
Some people took it seriously, and then some people go like, eh, why not? Like,
It's kind of brilliant. So
yeah, it is.
There were four companies that were awarded, kind of three, but depending on how you count it. But iSpace out of
and government contracts was the last one really awarded.
Right.
But
it's kind of hilarious. But iSpace Europe and iSpace Tokyo, so two different branches of iSpace, the international company. They charged $5,000 each, and they were both, I guess, proposed, like, you know, logical concepts that NASA says, okay, we'll give you the money to do this. Then you've got, like, the most serious one, I guess, would be for $15,000 from a company out of California called Masten Space Systems.
Which is someone where they're not shy from the moon. We've seen them plenty of times. Like,
right.
It's kind of like a, like, no-brainer for NASA to choose them.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, you know, the $5,000 you just kind of need, okay, it's under the $20,000 or $25,000, like, criteria. Mm-hmm. $15,000, okay, that's a lot of money, but it's serious business. And then this company out of Colorado called Lunar Outpost, which has, like, a few hundred Twitter followers. Like, it's wild.
Daddy!
Hey, buddy. They proposed a dollar.
Just $1.
Because they're already going to be on the moon. And it's
it looks like there's kind of like, it kind of looks like a little bit of a, not like kind of like a publicity stunt.
It's good PR. Like, they really
are.
Yeah,
like, they're already going to do it. Like, they're already going to kind of do it. And, like, we might as well throw our hat in the ring and, you know, get people to know who we are, figure out, you know, what we're doing. And how the best way to do that? Undercut everyone by as much as possible.
What I found especially hilarious is that it's like you get 10% now, 10% on arrival, and 80% on delivery of the moon rocks. And so they get a dime now. They get a dime on the moon, and they get 80 cents when it's finished.
Like, they're going to just send them a dime. Like you can't send it. Like, how do you even, like, I feel like if you're NASA, you can't just, like, deposit 10 cents into our account.
And also,
like, it's too little.
By being 15,000, 5,000, 5,000, it's like you've got, the total price of the program is $25,001.
And $1. Like, which you usually don't see that. Like, you just see, like, oh, it was, like, a general. But this one was literally, like, yep, $25,000 and $1. And with, I mean, another lunar return sample that it's already happened, actually, was China's Chang'e 5 lander.
Yeah.
Which launched the, what is it? The November 23rd, which was, like, the Sunday before Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really interesting mission because they kind of had a really interesting time frame. So it's launched not necessarily on the far side of the moon, but, like, to the part of the moon where we can't see. It's on the side of the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And so the lander could only last one lunar day, which is about, I think it's 2 weeks here on Earth.
Okay.
And so it was a lunar return sample. They would land, drill, pick up sample, launch, get back into the spacecraft, return it, and they had 2 weeks to do it. Or 2 weeks on lunar service to do it. And their time frame was to do it within, like, a couple days.
Mm-hmm.
And so it launched. And because it's China, we get leaks, but we don't really get public, like, releases from them.
Right. There's more cooperation between, like, Russia and China in the space program than the U.S. and China, for example.
Yeah.
And there's optimism from the NASA side that, you know, it could go well, but we don't know if what they collect will be shared with us, for example.
So it was interesting when they first landed, we were kind of like, well, like, the stream shut off. Like, there was a stream for it, for the landing. Right before landing, the stream cut, and then the state-run media said that it landed, and we're just like, okay, did it land? It did land. I don't know. We don't know why the stream cut.
They got cold feet, and they maybe didn't want to risk showing failure, even though it worked.
Like, everything looked good, and all of a sudden it just cut.
Yeah.
And it was, like, weird.
And like, China's space program, like, they're doing serious stuff. They've got their first Mars mission
was launched this year as well. Mm-hmm. And they've been going to... They're serious on the moon.
First rover,
they've been going. This is their fifth land... spacecraft to go to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And they already have, like, a couple lined up to go, like, afterwards. Like, they have a whole mission set planned out. Mm-hmm. So it landed on the moon, like, earlier this week, I believe. It's about 3 days. It has successfully got samples. It put it into the ascender, they call it, or the ascent vehicle, and it launched, and I believe it's docked, and I believe it's about to head on its way back home. Like, they were not messing around when they did this. They landed. They got the work right away. Like, they didn't want to, you know, end up failing the mission because they couldn't do it within the time frame.
Yeah.
And they got it, which was, I mean, I'm kind of, they will share the samples. So NASA has shared samples. It's kind of, it is a little tense between China and the United States because there is law in an act by Congress that the United States can't cooperate in the space program with China. The samples that were returned were dug from, like, meters down below, which is, like, it's kind of, like, really important to scientists. Like, they really want to see this.
Yeah.
So hopefully they're a little nice and they'll share it. But either way, like, it was a really, so far, a huge success for China.
Yeah, which, you know, zoom way out. And I think generally the idea of a space race is kind of frowned upon. It's like, because it just ended, you know, with U.S. and Russia. It's like, we got to the moon and it was over. And it was like,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was actually too bad. But as we see competition, you know, or just achievements from Russia and from China in a big way right now, then that can be a good way to spend less invest in our space program in the U.S. because look what China's doing, and look how fast they're doing it, and this isn't the time for us to back off. So, you know, if they don't share the samples for science, then if nothing else, then it's like another example of why the U.S. space program needs to be advanced and continue to be funded. Last thing I want to talk about is just a quick wrap up of, like, launches to watch this month, because it's December and there happens to be something happening every week. So this weekend, Saturday or Sunday, depending on the weather, you've got the SpaceX CRS-21 mission from Kennedy Space Center. And we will have our colleague Daryl Saucier on the ground. And he'll be covering that on site. Can't wait. And I believe he's also doing some interviews with folks this week.
Today, he's doing some interviews today. He set up remote cameras, I think, this morning.
Yeah.
So,
and then it just comes down to launching tomorrow. Or I think the weather's better than it was for Saturday, and it's a little bit worse for Sunday than it was.
Yeah, so Sunday is, I think, like 50-50 on general weather. Yeah. And then if you look more into the details, there's a moderate chance for violation with upper level winds. SpaceX has a very historic issue with those. They don't like them. And then
they prevent launches.
The biggest issue, this is kind of like probably the biggest one, there's a high chance of recovery weather being bad for recovery.
Which will affect, because they're so good at recovery that we saw this with Crew One, where everything was fine on the rocket side for launching, but to have the drone ships out in the ocean for recovery, that weather wasn't good, and so they moved it back a day just so they could get the booster back.
And there's two reasons why they need to get the booster back. For this one, they're not building Falcon 9s like they used to. Their production rate has slowed, and they're trying to reuse their fleet that they have. They got to manage their fleet.
They're up to seven flights for one booster so far.
This is a very special booster as well. This is the DM2 booster,
right? So this is the first booster to have flown astronauts.
Yeah, it's the first one that SpaceX ever flew crew on, and the first one in 10 years that we, like, it's a very historic booster, and we were all taking bets after DM2. Would they reuse the booster? Would they
put it in a museum?
Put it in a museum. Yeah. They've been reflying it,
this is the only one that has the NASA worm on it, right? Because they moved the NASA worm logo from the first stage to the second stage for crew.
I think because NASA wasn't too happy with this booster when it flew a commercial payload for the South Korea.
Yeah.
The South Korean military, actually.
Yeah.
And so
nothing to do with NASA at all. And it had the worm on it. Nothing to do with NASA
at all, and it had the worm plastered right on it. Though, it's kind of hard to see during stream, but it had the worm on it.
Yeah. It's just covered in space now. But
it's covered in... Yeah, it's all scorched up still right now. But, it's important to get that thing back, and hopefully 10 flights, and they can retire it and put it in a museum.
Yeah, yeah. So there's that Saturday or Sunday, depending on how the weather goes. We are expecting the SpaceX Starship SN9 serial number eight hop test for 12.5 kilometers. So 15 kilometers was 100 times further than before. So 12.5 is less than 100 times, but still way further than before.
It'll still be... very high.
Yeah.
very high.
Looking for that on Monday at the earliest. That'll be awesome. Virgin Orbit and Virgin Galactic have flights this month. So they've got just start dates for when they could be.
Yeah, Virgin Orbit's doing the Demonstration 2 mission, which is kind of like a successor to the first Demonstration mission, since it had a failure in the first stage.
And these are rare. These aren't like every week, every month. These are
very, very rare like flights. They don't really, because Virgin's kind of developing this rocket. So hopefully when it's developed, they'll have them more often, especially because it seems to be more financially sound than the past air launch systems.
They got Richard Branson behind it, so it helps.
And they got Richard Branson. He's going to push it. Yeah, and then Virgin Galactic, which is also part of Virgin Group, but not necessarily part of Virgin Orbit, is doing their first test flight, I believe, from Spaceport America this month.
Yeah, Virgin Orbit, like their move is to send, so on an aircraft, launch a rocket.
Yeah, so they're both air launch systems. Yeah. Virgin Orbit is a commercial launch provider where it has a payload that you put your satellite, they're small sats, so they're like competing with Rocket Lab pretty much.
Right.
And it's on a 747 aircraft. It drops it and it can launch into low Earth orbit.
Yeah. Hasn't worked out yet, but they're working on it.
Yeah, this is only their second launch attempt, so it's completely fine if they don't, like, it's on average that it takes 3 launches for a company to get to orbit. So,
yeah.
I mean, Astra was another small sat launcher that's still trying to get to orbit as well, and we have Firefly coming up. Like, it's
once
another
there was a company called SpaceX that was trying to get to orbit.
Yeah, there was also 3. One time there was SpaceX launching a small sat launcher as well, the Falcon 1, and it took them several attempts to get there as well, so... Virgin Galactic is, of course, space tourism. They have these VSS Unity, I believe, is launching, which is not even low Earth orbit. It's a suborbital space plane.
Yeah, you go to the Kármán line, basically, for...
Yeah, it's just barely the Kármán line.
Yeah.
Which is the
definition of space. It's like...
Yeah, this is definitely a more complex machine because it has a custom carrier aircraft called White Knight 2, which is kind of like a dual split. It looks like two planes put together. And then in between the two like planes sits the it's called Starship 2, I believe.
Starship 2.
Starship 2, White Knight 2, everything. Yeah, but VSS Unity is the name of the specific one flying, which has flown before. And then they're going to try to do their first one out of Spaceport America, which they usually do it out of Mojave, but now their operation will be out of Spaceport
America. And that's
America.
New Mexico,
yep. This will have pilots.
Pilots, okay. Richard Branson wants to go, maybe for the next one?
No, they're planning once it's... Richard Branson will fly the last demonstration mission before the first operational one.
Okay.
They were hoping to do that before the end of this year, but that got pushed to next year. This will have 2 pilots, of course, like every other flight they've had with this vehicle. Mm-hmm. And then also payloads for NASA.
And they've got they changed CEOs this past year, where they've had one CEO who still sticks around for like sciencey stuff and detailed stuff, but their new CEO, it comes from Disney, and he's been in charge of like I think Disney Parks for many, many years, and it just fits their part of their company's development, where now they're going from building the hardware to trying to get really high paying customers to come on board, and you can already like reserve a seat and be.
I think Justin Bieber already has a seat on there.
I don't blame him. I would too.
I mean, hopefully he just doesn't film a music video from there.
No, that would be cool. He should do it for.
It would be cool. I like his newer music, but.
So that's Virgin Galactic, and those are both in December. We've also got we mentioned before Space Launch Systems Hot Fire Test at Denver Space Center. That'll be the week of the 20th at the earliest. Fingers crossed that sticks, because like getting it done in 2020 would be great.
That would be a huge milestone. They really need to start hitting.
They need to win, because Denver Space Center's had the pandemic beginning in March, where they were literally closed for 6 weeks. And then they slowly reopened, but still, we're in this pandemic situation where you can't have...
Got just kept by getting hit by several hurricanes.
Was directly targeted by 3 hurricanes this year.
Yeah, and Mother Nature did not view kindly.
Which meant closing everything down, securing the core stage, and stopping work, and then it adds work to go out and reboot everything. So there's that. And then what's not yet public but is on our radar is that Blue Origin will have their 14th flight of New Shepard this year.
Yeah.
They have the FAA, or maybe it's TFR, I don't know. But they've got the paperwork done for a December launch, and we're looking at just before the SLS core stage hot fire test.
Yeah, I don't see any TFR up for their area in Texas, but because the only one in Texas is Brownsville.
Right.
So there was a new one, though. Breaking news. There is one in Kodiak, Alaska. So,
oh, is that going to be...
That's another Astro Launch. And looking at that, a really packed December for launches, and a lot of historic ones at that.
Yeah. All right, cool. Thanks so much, Seth, for doing this. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We're in Apple Podcasts. We're on Spotify. We're everywhere that you can get your podcasts. We also broadcast on youtube.com/spaceexplored. We'll pick a time and date so we do this every week, and you can reliably tune in and listen. Thanks so much, Seth.
Thanks so much. Bye.